Hi, Lloyd. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randy. How you doing? Thanks for inviting me up here.
Lloyd, which musicians influenced your style of playing?
A lot of different musicians influenced my style of playing. I listened to R&B, blues. You know, I started out listening to Bo Diddley, you know. Stuff like that, and Chuck Berry. You know, then the blues guitar players, the jazz guitar players, Wes, Kenny Burrell, and then I listened to. I grew up in the orchestra in school, so I listened to a lot of music, and they played jazz at the house where I lived, so in the neighborhood, so I listened to all of that stuff.
What was it about their playing that you liked so much?
Well, I guess I said something about Bo Diddley. I liked his playing because it was fast. You know, he used a lot of rhythmic stuff, and that was kind of cool for me. And then I listened to jazz. Like, I listened to Kenny Burrell when he was with Jimmy Smith, and I just kind of liked the way it flowed. You know, I guess at that point in time, as a child, I didn't know what it was about the playing that I liked. I just liked the music.
Are there any older recordings that you might listen to that would give you maybe ideas or inspiration in playing or composing?
Oh, once in a while I kind of listen to old stuff if I feel like it. You know, you go through periods of time where certain things you want to hear, certain other things you might want to hear at this time. So depending on my state of mind or my mood, I'll listen to different things and old stuff, new stuff, stuff from different genres. And if I feel that way, you know, if I'm melancholy, I might listen to some, you know, Alice Coltrane or something, you know.
Are you always on the lookout for musical challenges with yourself or maybe with your band?
Yeah, I'm always in a situation that's challenging. My band keeps me challenged all the time. And then a lot of times we do a lot of jazz gigs and we go into the book and get songs that I've never heard before. I play with a lot of different musicians, and all the different musicians bring different things to the table. So I'm always learning new things and having, you know, just having new experiences in the music. That's why I like playing.
Are there any musicians that you would have loved to have performed with, Lloyd?
Well, I would probably have loved to play with, or there were a couple musicians that I really wanted to meet, Wes Montgomery and Chet Atkins. Never got to meet them, and I would have loved to have sat down and just done some woodshedding and playing with them and learning things, I guess.
Talk a little bit about your time with the great guitarist Barney Kessel.
Well, when Barney Kessel was doing a bunch of seminars, traveling around the country doing seminars, so I got a chance to go to one of his seminars and spend, I think it was a couple of days, and that was the first real jazz guitar player that I'd ever been in close proximity of, and just the correctness and the vocabulary of technique that he had was just awe-inspiring for me. As far as Howard Roberts was concerned, I ran across a Howard Roberts record, and he was really soulful. And when I went to his seminars, this was before he put together the Musicians Institute in Los Angeles, he had a vast array of different things to look at from a guitar player's perspective that I'd never seen before. So both of them were very eye-opening experiences.
Is there one person who is still alive that you would love to record with?
That's easy. I'm an Oscar Peterson groupie. Oscar makes time stand still. So, like, if I had a chance to record with somebody, I'd just like to play with him just once. I think that would just be the most awesome experience. Man, like, I'm, you know, when I get a new record or something, I always send it to Oscar. I don't even know if he knows who I am, but I send it to him anyway because I'm an Oscar groupie. I claim that.
Now, Lloyd, if you had to form a dream band, who would it consist of, and have you given any thought to what compositions you would play together?
My dream band, let me see, Rodney Franklin, Stanley Clark, Jerry Brown, let me see, who would be the other keyboard player? I don't know, maybe my friend down in L.A., his name is Ron Coleman. Used to be Aretha Franklin's musical director, and what pieces would I play? Oh, man, we would just create in the studio. It would be great.
What brand of instrument do you play, Lloyd?
Right now I'm playing an Ovation Custom Legend. My, relationship with Ovation came when I was teaching. I was teaching guitar, and one of my students came one day and gave me an Ovation guitar and said, "Here, you've taught me a lot, and I really want to repay you back, and the money that I'm paying you is not enough. So here," and he gave me an Ovation guitar, and I recorded my first CD with that guitar. So when I got a chance, I got an Ovation electric or acoustic electric, and I've been playing it ever since. And my solid body guitar is a Yamaha SBG 3000, which is a vicious instrument. I love it. It plays itself. That's why I play it. It plays itself. I don't have to work that hard.
You know, Art Blakey and Miles Davis are two very good examples of individuals who had a knack of surrounding themselves with younger musicians in their bands, and this not only kept the music fresh, but kept them young as well, and I think that the music was all the better for it. Lloyd, do you have any comments about this?
Well, basically, that's the way I live my life. You know, most of the musicians really like playing with me because of the fact that I want them to play. A lot of band leaders want their musicians to sit back and lay in the pocket or don't play too much or something. And when I get a new musician, it takes him a while to learn that I want him to play and open up and, you know, enjoy. He's got to enjoy it. He's got to play. He's got to use his ideas. He's got to use his technique. He's got to use his skills. And they usually have fun. They're usually sweating after the end of the first song. But, you know, that's the way I live. You know, everybody brings their ideas. Everybody comes and has fun. That's what music is about. It's not about sitting back and playing real straight. No, they got to go. You know, we play and everybody gets to express themselves. That's very important, because when people get to express themselves, they play good, and then we have a good time, and the people enjoy it.
Did music come naturally to you when you were growing up?
Yeah, my mother said I used to scoot to the radio before I could walk. So, yeah, music has been part of my life since before I could understand what was going on. That's really natural.
Why did you decide to play the guitar?
Don't have a clue. Just like the guitar. I was playing piano at the time, and I played trombone, and I played drums, and I was playing cello. And I did most of my playing coming up on cello, so I guess guitar was just a natural instrument to come next. But really, why I started playing guitar, don't have a clue.
When you were growing up, what music did you listen to?
I remember when I was a little bitty baby on my grandmother's lap, she used to listen to the Everly Brothers. I remember Jerry Lee Lewis. I remember the Beatles. I remember Jimmy Smith. I remember Wes Montgomery, Kenny Burrell. Like I said, Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry and on up. I listened to music all the time. So everything that was on the radio, whatever station someone else was listening to, I heard that. I grew up with it. You know, I still listen to it.
I have to ask you, Lloyd, were both of your parents musical?
My dad's family was very musical. My aunt played in the church, and his sisters were singing in the choir. My granddaddy was a preacher, so they were singing, and I found out when I went back to Indianapolis where they were that they were pretty famous as gospel singers in that area. My mom was a kindergarten teacher, she was a nursery school teacher then, and she used to play the piano for the kids. You know, little songs like stuff like that. She would play all that kind of stuff. So, you know, yeah, there was music around me.
Okay, Lloyd, 10 recordings that you'd bring with you on a desert island. I know this might be tough to only pick 10, but try and see if you can pick out just 10 recordings that you would really, really love to bring with you if you ever were stranded on a desert island.
I think starting with number one would be Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix, because one side of that album is just something to kick back and relax. And then there's the other side where he does Voodoo Child, Slight Return, I think it is. Every time I used to go to a gig while I was getting dressed, I'd always play that, so I'd be charged up and pumped up to go to the gig. So that would be it. And then Black Orpheus by Louis Bonfa, who's a guitarist, writer from Brazil. And that was a CD that, or it was an album that I grew up, I don't even know where I found it, but this song right here. I used to love that song. Oh, I used to love this song. Well, anyway, and then there's a... It was a series of albums by Lorenda Almeida, Brazilian guitarist, and Paul Horn, I think he was a alto saxophone player. They were a series, three albums called Brazilians, and I used to listen to those all the time. They were just lovely, beautiful, beautiful melodic songs, and God, I haven't heard anything about that in a long time. And then something by Django Reinhardt, you know, gotta have some Django. And then Toni Braxton's first album, I love that. She just floats with the music. She's just very gifted. And I've always liked that album. Oscar Peterson's My Favorite Instrument, which is a solo CD that he did. And that's just an incredible piece of work. And any of the Oscar Peterson albums with him playing live with his band in a with an audience, he's slamming. And then... there's a Robbie Robertson CD, the one with Aaron Neville. It's like Robbie Robertson was a leader of a group called The Band, which was Bob Dylan's group. And I think he was a leader of the band. And his recording technique is so lush and rich. And that particular CD with Aaron Neville on it is just an incredible piece of sonic work. And then one of my favorite albums is Secret Story by Pat Metheny. I think they won a Grammy for that one. I forgot what year it was, but I always wanted to do something like that. It's just a really well put together and produced piece of work. And then I guess to round it out would be Graceland by Paul Simon. That's really rich and with, really good songs, really heartfelt music, and I've always liked Paul Simon's work, and that particular album is just really, 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 really rich.
Any other instruments that you play besides the guitar?
Yeah, well, my main instrument is guitar, and then there's this other instrument, it's called a TV, and man, you know, you turn those knobs. I love the television.
Of all the recordings that you've made over the years, what is your most satisfying one to date?
My new CD, Free Fallen. I love it. It was the first CD that I've done that I actually use the guys in my band. I have different units that I use, and I was able to get each unit complete on a song on the CD. And we all came together and kind of put the songs together, and it was a bunch of fun, and people get a chance to hear my group finally.
The sound that you get on your guitar reminds me of a nice blend of Earl Klug, Wes Montgomery, and even George Benson. How did you get to that particular sound that you've got now? Did that take many years, or was there anything special that you did or incorporated into your playing?
Well, first of all, thanks for the compliment of putting my name or relating me to Earl Klug and Wes Montgomery and George Benson, some of the greatest guitar players. And like Earl Klug is one of the most sensitive guitar players I've ever heard. And Wes, his lyrical ability, his phrasing is incredible. And George Benson's he's about probably the best guitar player on the planet. So thanks for that. That's, you know, what can I say to behind that? As far as my sound, my tone, I had my guitar worked on by my guitar tech, and he put some pickups in there, and I asked him, well, what's it going to do? What are these pickups going to do? And he said, well, they're going to make people think you can play. So I'll give him credit for that.
You know, I've always held the belief that as people grow older, most people tend to lose that ability of feeling the freedom of a child, and along with that, the creativity and the sense of discovery. And I was just wondering if you had any comments on that regarding music and just the whole art form of creativity.
You know, I have a phrase that I use all the time. I'll grow older, but I'll never grow up. And that just says it right there.
There's something else that I want to run by you, Lloyd, and that's the idea of when you create and you have ideas, it seems as though if you have an idea that's basically floating as opposed to rigid, you leave yourself wide open to more possibilities, and this in turn enhances the ability to create, innovate, and make some beautiful music.
On my guitar case, I have a sticker I found that says, "Normal people worry me." Whenever you have an idea or something in your mind that is new, it's well known among my friends that you kind of keep it to yourself and work with it and keep the people around you that are creative, because the normal people, the naysayers, will always smash your fresh ideas. And whenever you try to do something new, you want to kind of hold on to it, because it's like a baby, you know, that's still in the womb. It's not strong enough to take the criticisms of the naysayers. So you have to keep it close to your heart. And like I say, normal people worry me. You know, these people that are so stuck on what they think it's supposed to be, and they can't see past their own little cliche existence. But those are the people that think they're grown, I guess, because the kids, people that are grown, still got the kid going on. So I don't know what to say about that, but I guess that's what I said.
Do you prefer performing or writing material?
I love it all.
When you're writing, does it take you long to complete a composition? Do ideas come to you quickly, or do you have to labor over them?
When writing, sometimes they just come to you. I guess they're called psychic hits or psychic pops. They just bang, and you have this idea. Other times, something inspires you to write something. Maybe you fell in love, or maybe you decided you really disliked something that somebody did to you, and the tension and the frustration created something for you to write about. And then sometimes you really have to work at it, because there's nothing there and you got to get it done. So then you have to sit down and architecturally put it together, you know, write by, okay, this chord goes with this chord, and this chord follows that, and then you got to go to the 5 chord, and then you come back to the 1.
Is there any particular setting that you enjoy, one over the other? For example, maybe solo, duo, a group ensemble, or even orchestral?
I like playing in all settings. I love playing in a group, and I love playing solo.
Do you prefer touring outside of the United States?
You know, if the music is good, all the audiences are appreciative. I've got good response here in the United States, great response in Europe, great response in Japan. I mean, most audiences, if the music's good, they are appreciative. They might appreciate it in a different way, but once you get to understand how they are digging it, it's all beautiful.
How did your CD, Free Fallen, come about?
Was that the song or the album? The album came about because I had a chance to record, and I went in and started recording, and I just kept recording and recording and recording and recording until I had enough songs to eliminate some, and then the Free Falling album came out. As far as the song Free Falling, now, I had a friend of mine, a vocalist, a dynamic vocalist, her name is Margot. I told her I wanted to come in and do some background vocals on a couple of my songs. Well, for some reason, singers just can't come in and sing without coming up with words. So she listened to the tune and started coming up with these words, and she started talking about, "I'm falling, free falling." So, you know, after that, the song had to be called Free Falling. I couldn't call it Jumpstart after she's hollering Free Falling. So that's how it came to be Free Falling.
There's a very melodic number off of Free Fallen entitled Jazz for Jasmine. Who's Jasmine?
Jazz for Jasmine was written by my keyboard player, Percy Scott, who's actually a member of the Whispers band. He wrote the song, and I fell in love with it. And Jasmine is his niece, who, while he was writing the song, used to hang around him. So he named it Jazz for Jasmine. For some reason, when they started to do the paperwork or the print the logo for the record, they put Jazz Man, J-A-Z-Z-M-A-N. And I would not have that, because it's a song for a little girl. And that's what it's about. She's a little girl, a little precious little girl. I wish I had a picture of her on the album, but I wasn't able to do that.
I'd like to feature something off of Free Fallin'. What would you like to hear?
I'd like to have you play Maya. Go something like this. Maya's my daughter, and I used to call her Doodle. And on my last CD, well, doodles are things that I, you know, things that like a... And I always, you know, have them on the secondary guitar and on tracks a lot of times. And on my solo CD, I had a couple of little inserts called Doodles, Doodle 1 and 2, where I just played guitar and, you know, just kind of let it float. So this CD, I played another Doodle. I used to call her Doodle when she was a little baby. And this was going to be Doodle number 3. And I, you know, played it, and then I played guitar on top of it, and then sent it down to my nephew, who does movie soundtracks, to arrange a string score around it. But now the Doodle's older, her name is Maya, so like we just named it after her, because it was supposed to be a doodle.
Lloyd, I'm going to throw some names your way, and I just want you to briefly comment on each one of them. Let's start with Duke Ellington and guitarist Grant Green.
The Duke, what can you say about the Duke? One thing that I learned from the Duke is that he wrote the music for the band based off of the players in the band. And that's kind of something that I follow. I let the band do what is comfortable for them, and then create the music around that. And that seems to work better than trying to make the band play what you came up with, because it might not be comfortable for those players. And Duke knew that secret, and it's really a good one. As far as Grant Green, I grew up listening to Grant Green. And then when I started playing in big bands, they tell me to comp like Grant Green, you know. That's Grant Green kind of playing.
What about the great pianist Bill Evans?
Bill Evans is a pianist. I never really listened to him.
Here's one for you. One of the trailblazers on the guitar, the great Charlie Christian.
Charlie Christian now. Charlie Christian was one of the first electric guitar players. He and T-Bone Walker, I think, they came around the same time, except Charlie Christian was jazz and T-Bone was blues, but they kind of started the electric guitar thing. Before that, it was all acoustic guitar.
And what about Bud Powell?
Bud Powell is awesome. He's just fantastic. His chops were just incredible, you know.
What's your take on the current state of popular music?
You know, it's interesting. When that music that you're speaking of was being played, the older people were saying that that wasn't good music, because the music they grew up listening to was the real stuff. And the times change, you know. People, they create things. The younger people create things. And it was interesting. I was in a studio with Shock G, who's the leader of Digital Underground, and he was doing what you call sampling now. And he was taking stuff and putting it together, man. And when I looked at him and realized what he was doing, it was genius. I'd never seen nothing like it, and the boy was great. But it's different from what they were playing before. But if you listen to the rappers, they're poets now, you know, and they're using a beat. They're using a beat, which is like a chant, which is, you know, James Brown used to have a beat that was like a chant, and it drove people crazy. But that was then, and now this is a new thing. And these kids are really, you know, if you really listen to what they're saying and look at how they're putting these things together, They're the new geniuses of the music industry, and, you know, I have nothing bad to say about them.
Do you remember the first concert that you ever attended?
I was lucky enough to see Duke Ellington at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. I found out later that that was history that I had gone to see. I had just come to California, and a friend of my mother's knew that I was a musician and took me to see Duke Ellington, and I will always thank her for that. That was a wonderful experience.
And how about the best concert that you ever saw in your life?
I think the best concert I ever saw was the first time I saw Jimi Hendrix. I was floored. I had never seen nothing like that. And at that time, I had played with a lot of the acts. I had played with, you know, I'd been on tour with a group as their musical director, and we traveled with James Brown. We played with the Temps, Gladys, and the Pips, Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder, Smokey and the Miracles, Four Tops, Jackie Wilson, Martha and the Vandellas. I played with all of them, and when I saw Jimi Hendrix, I'd never seen nothing like that in my life. And the next concert I saw that I think was great was Van Halen with David Lee Roth. That was, man.
Do you spend much time practicing?
No, I don't get to spend as much time as I need to practicing or as much time as I want to. Actually, I like playing the guitar because I love to practice, but I don't get much time to do it. But I've learned that when you practice, it's best to start with the basics and to work those very slowly, and that's usually the best way to go.
If you never pursued a career in music, what would you be doing instead?
Well, I don't consider myself a jazz player. I've been locked into that, you know, category by people, but I'm just a guitar player. I'm a musician. I like music. If I had not played music, I love planes. I would have loved to flown a jet fighter, but, you know, I don't like the destructive aspect of it, but, you know, man, flying. I just love flying, and the speed of one of those, man, I would just, awesome. I used to teach at a school called Family Light Music School in Sausalito in California. In fact, that's where the student gave me the first Ovation guitar I ever had. But I'm not doing any teaching now. But I still work with kids. I coach football. In fact, I named a song after the football team. I call them the Curmudgeons. They're a bunch of little rowdies running around. So I call them Curmudgeons, and I named the tune Curmudgeon after them. But as far as teaching music, I'm not doing that at the moment. Well, actually, I want to do a Christmas CD, and I'd like to do a spiritual CD, you know, and something with an orchestra. And then a long time ago, I did a jazz vesper service with guitar, tambora, sarod, and the Indian instruments, and it was very, very beautiful. The tambora has that drone, you know, that I can't even explain it, but the drone, and I really like that. And I'd like to do something with that. And actually, I want to do a project with vibes, a harp string section. In fact, my nephew and I have been talking about it. And we're thinking about trying to put that together and a choir. Well, I'm supposed to do a Christmas CD. I don't know how soon I'm going to get started on that. I actually tried to start doing it a couple of years ago. I've always wanted to do that. And probably a follow-up to Free Falling. Well, art kind of reflects society, so your artists are the first ones that actually give you an idea of what's going on in society. They take the energy from their existence and create from it, so they're very important because they are the mirrors of the populace. I don't know if it was as a professional, but I think my first gig, there wasn't a high school dance. My dad was able to take the whole band, put our instruments in the trunk of his car, take us to a beer joint where we got $5 a piece, and he got to play the pinball machine while we were playing. And if you know anything about instruments, if you can get the whole band in the trunk of the car, you know the pinball machine was louder than we were. So we're playing our music, and my daddy's playing the pinball machine. Bing, bing, dang, 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 dang. There's my son up there. That was cool. Oh, I listen to contemporary jazz, I listen to jazz, and because I have kids, I hear hip-hop all the time. That's how come I know what it's like, because I come in the house, they got it on this TV upstairs, when I get in the car, they fight for the radio, so I hear a lot of hip-hop, too. when it's time for me to compose, I usually do a lot of meditation and do a lot of just playing and doing a lot of solo playing, and it kind of comes out of there. It's through osmosis, I guess. Well, any musician's probably got 10 million stories, road horror stories or funny stories. I remember one time I was playing with a group called the Ballads, and they called me to, they needed me to come down to L.A. because they were gigging and they were getting ready to work their way back up to the Bay Area. And they flew me down there, and they stopped by the club on the way back from the airport to get the rest of their money, and the sheriff had padlocked the club's door, so I flew down to L.A. to help them climb out of the motel bathroom windows. That was one thing. And then there was another time I flew to, I think, Washington, D.C., and a guy picked us up in a limo. He thought he was doing great because he had this old beat-up limo, and once we got on the mountain roads, it broke down. So we were stranded in Washington, D.C. in the snow. So I think it was mountain roads in D.C.? Maybe we weren't in, yeah, we were in D.C. It wasn't a mountain road, but it's back in the, like the backwoods or somewhere, I don't know. And then I think one time I went to Atlanta because I was with Jesse James. He had a hit record, so we went all the way to Atlanta to play, and we played at some kind of park next to a junkyard. That was kind of cool. And they had picnic tables and barbecues, so we ate good. We didn't get paid, but, you know, so I got a million of those stories. Well, I wish I could have seen John Coltrane and Charlie Parker. It was a wonderful time. I got a chance to see Louis Armstrong. So it would have been good to be there and be part of that. But there's a whole new thing happening now, and I'm part of it now. So, you know, there's a commercial on TV where an old man is talking to a child and talking about the good old days. And he says, wait a minute, this is the good old days. Well, I used to have a mailing list, but now you used to have to send out, you know, mailers to people, and that got to, you know, stamps and all of that. It got to be a big job, but with the internet, I can get to the people right away, and they can, you know, return conversation and turn me on to stuff, and, you know, we've become closer because of it. And then my fans across the country, they're able to get to me easily too, and I'm able to get to them, so it's made it a better world. You know, presidents are people, and different people have different agendas. Bill Clinton plays a saxophone. He's a musician. He comes from a musical family. You know, his brother George has a band, too. I'm glad you asked that question. You know, I was talking to my friend Nate, who was in the movie. He's Stevie's bass player, and we were discussing that same thing yesterday about the fact that that movie kind of showed that the industry really doesn't respect musicians. And, you know, those guys, they did all of the hits from way back, and people were listening to that music and for years and years and years. And it's really good that the movie did come out to show the musicianship that was behind all of those hits that came out there. So I'm really glad that the movie did come out and those people got the recognition that they deserved, and I think it's a long time coming. Thank you, Randy, for asking me to come, and I really do appreciate it. And